This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on today. The president will be in a signing ceremony on the Genius Act. Congratulations to not only getting Republicans to vote for it, but 100 Democrats to vote for it. He's also going to have a dinner with the Republican senators, so that's going to be interesting for him. And we're going to have a lot to discuss. We have Senator Marsha Blackburn standing by, Daniel Turner, founder of the Energy Advocacy Group. We'll talk about gas prices and everything else that could be happening, and also the different things we're doing to get the fuel for AI. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
This is not serious at all. This is a benign issue. It's something that happens as you get older. It happens to most people at some point as they age. This is a real non-issue. Health-wise, he's in great health.
There you go. That is Dr. Ronny Jackson talking about Donald Trump's the health of his presidency after the bizarre Epstein eruption and the physical health after his condition revealed. You'll be surprised by the polls.
Number two.
Mom Donnie, what do you make of him and how worried or concerned are you about his policies?
I'm very concerned about his policies. His policies aren't going to work. They're going to get cops hurt.
Yeah, no kidding. That's Scott Monroe, president of the Detectives Endowment Association, who, by the way, is going with Eric Adams. Marxist Mamdani, the Dems' direction, Biden's auto pen have all combined to crater the party's popularity and their remedies worse than the disease. We'll explain.
Number one.
The American dream is back, and everyday families are already reaping the benefits of this incredible economic turnaround in just 6 months.
Economic breakthrough. Prices heading down. Trump records two more economic legislative wins. Money clawed back from the budget as tariffs produce the first monthly surplus in years. And that is the president happy. But also, when you look at the party support, he's got to be happy about this. And that is that his approval amongst his party went up 3 points. So he is on a roll. Senator Marsha Blackburn joins us now, Judiciary, Finance, and Transportation. Senator, welcome back.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you so much. And you are so correct. President Trump is on a roll. And, Brian, I think we are all happy with continuing to win every single day. The U.S. is winning every day.
I mean, if you look at everyone's focused on, hey, what's going on with Epstein and is it sidelining the president's support? And I've been befuddled by it. But prior to Epstein, the CNN and Q poll had him at 86% amongst Republicans, right? Now, after it, it's at 88%, and the Q poll has him at 90%. So we didn't see this type of support the whole first term.
You've got that right. And I think everyone knows President Trump has some of the best political instincts of anybody, and he seeks to be transparent. And they know that he is going to do that over whatever there is with Epstein. For me, this has always been about finding out who his business partners were and breaking apart a global human and sex trafficking ring.
So I want to fast forward, and let's talk about the economy. I mean, basically, you're seeing a lot of economic gains, but first off, on the crypto, on the Genius Act, how did you get Democrats? Did Democrats also realize there needs to be some structure here? It seems to be you guys approach this on the outside from a mature level, almost as if you realize we can't play politics with this.
And you cannot, because China has moved forward with the digital yuan. And we do not want a central bank digital currency. And the Genius Act is a stable coin act, which means you can tokenize your transactions. They are all pegged to the U.S. dollar.
Good.
And this is something that is going to speed transactions for U.S. citizens and allow them to still peg all of that to the dollar.
So let's talk about what's happening with the trade deals and I guess the tariffs. If you look at some of the headlines in April when you had the Liberation Day, NBC News, Trump's new tariffs will hit lower income households. CBS News, here's why experts think Trump's tariffs could hurt the economy. I go to June, where's the inflation from tariffs? Just wait, economists say. And then later on, MSNBC, why Americans haven't felt the brunt of Trump's tariffs. We're now in the middle of July. Only two countries have retaliated, and we have gotten more revenue in to create the first surplus, I think, since the Clinton years.
That is accurate. And that has been so underreported, which I found to be really quite remarkable. We had a budget surplus because of the tariffs, and it's the first that we have had since Bill Clinton was in the White House. Now, for all the naysayers who said that President Trump's policy on tariffs was wrong, I want them to look at that, and I want them to report on that number. Because this is exactly what we need, and it is precisely what Secretary Bessent and President Trump said would happen, and that we would be able to use those dollars to diminish and reduce our deficit and begin to pay down this national debt. And indeed, within 6 months, that is what is happening. It's the right type transaction for the United States. And we hope that with the months to come, we're still going to see those budget surpluses because of the effect of tariffs.
Senator Moshe Blackburn, our guest. Senator, yesterday you also had a rescission package. It took a while, but you got $9 billion out of the budget. And a lot of it came, $1.1 billion from the NPR and PBS. Now, PBS, I think, gets 15%. PBS gets 15% of that state budget federally mandated. The other one gets 1% federally mandated. And then you have other packages coming off the books. Here's Speaker Johnson, cut three.
We clawed back $9 billion in taxpayer funds and wasteful spending. Fraud, waste, and abuse, we've been targeting that every area. This was directed to wasteful spending in the previous State Department, of course, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and a couple of other areas. We looked at that. We thought it was a waste of taxpayer funds, and we're taking care of business. So we'll continue to do that. We're going to downsize the scope of government. Government is too large. It does too many things, and it does almost nothing well. We believe in a limited government that's accountable and efficient and effective for the people, and we're going to continue to demonstrate that through our actions here on the floor.
So $9 billion is one-tenth of 1% of the budget. I get it. But it's only been done one time before, and it looks like, according to the OMB director, you guys are going to go back again and look to cut more where?
Yes, indeed. We are going to go back and cut more. Now, when you want to cut discretionary spending, you do that through the rescission packages. And then mandatory comes through reconciliation. So those are the two big buckets. But when you look at what is happening in education, when you look at some of the duplication and the waste in grants coming out of the Commerce Department, coming out of the Department of Justice, Brian, those are all areas where we can go in and look at these programs. Now, here's one of the things that has been so deceptive in this budgeting process and why rescissions are necessary is because you have these NGOs and these government agencies that get their bucket of money, but then they don't tell you exactly how they're spending that money. That's how you end up getting money going to vegan food in Zambia or electric buses in Rwanda or voter ID programs in Haiti. And people don't want their taxpayer dollars being wasted on such programs. So bringing transparency to this, and President Trump and his cabinet deserve credit for this.
Well, what about the NGOs, Senator? The NGOs, that's what we've been hearing is the biggest waste of money. Can you get into that? The Catholic Charities and others, especially as they're working with, as they work with the illegal immigrants?
And as we conduct that budget oversight, as we work with the GAO, as we do these spending reviews, it gives us the opportunity to question and to really drill down on where they're spending their money, how they're spending their money, and who they are giving these grants to. Look at the EPA. They found the $2 billion grant that had gone to Stacey Abrams with her nonprofit that prior to that had $100 in the bank.
Understood. Lastly, what is going on with the National Teachers Union? They're going out of their way to go still get in front of the Donald Trump's agenda. They're actually upset with the current mayor race in New York City. What federal link do they have?
Yes, they are the only federally chartered labor union. And after their convention last month, where they were literally ranting and raving, Congressman Mark Harris and I have legislation that would yank that federal charter. When you have people that are so given to woke, to DEI, people that are not focused on teaching our kids history, but are focused on revisionist history, Brian, they do not deserve that. So it is important that we remove that federal charter. If they want to go on and do something on their own, fine, but they're not going to have the blessing of the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate.
Understood. Senator Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a fantastic weekend.
Always.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to go inside the energy production. Massive move by this administration to open up production, all things, including nuclear. It's not even a choice. It is absolutely necessary. And even Democrats will tell you, does that mean this whole craziness around green energy is going to stop? It's almost like a cult and a religion. Well, the renewables are great, but destroying your economy to do it is not. When we come back, that story and more. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In this bill, over $8 billion is taken away from what we do to alleviate poverty in the world, to lessen things like HIV and AIDS and other diseases, which have an impact on global health, to stop funding the World Health Organization.
This is what happens. You got to cut the budget. Democrats aren't going to like cutting the budget. They never do unless it's defense. And the administration's going in and doing what they said was impossible. It's tough. I mean, it's cut to PEPFAR, what George Bush put forward to control AIDS in Africa. They end up leaving that in because after 26 years, they don't want to stop financing it. It does save lives. But at some point, there has to be a sunset to it. Now, the counterargument is, hey, how much is that? The big budget, is that big a deal? And is soft power a positive? Yes. But the ultimate goal is to be able to manufacture, let these companies manufacture themselves if it's possible. You talk about maybe there's a way to purchase the drugs at a discount rate. So you have a way to surge yourself. You show the benevolence. You show the kindness for the impoverished. But when you talk about countries receiving drugs over the course of two decades for free, what the administration is looking at with this huge deficit is everything is on the table. And that's what Nancy Pelosi at 110 years old does not understand. Now this debt is not $3 trillion, it's $37 trillion. And with the interest rate so high, that number is going to grow considerably. And that's why they're cutting things back. I mean, that's why she'll never agree to it, and no Democrat's going to go forward. And maybe if they get power again, she won't be around. She has to retire at some point, I would think. She'll have to maybe restore that money, which good luck with that. You got to put in a budget and you got to go justify it. So the other big story is what's happening locally here with this Zoran Mamdani. This guy was proud of being a socialist Marxist. And for those of you in your 20s and 30s, you don't really understand what it's like to see the capitalism versus communism argument. I mean, we heard it our entire lives. And, you know, it started right after World War II. Everybody learned about Cold War, communism, free market, democracy, the advantage of capitalism. And then you have a whole generation without that Cold War saying, what's wrong with socialism? You know, isn't it great to be able to not have to worry about having a job and having government own everything and tell you what to do and having the social safety net that Europe has, but they don't have any innovation. They don't have any growth. There's no opportunity. They don't understand grit. And the more you find out about Mamdani, it's everything that America isn't. He wants to be the mayor of the financial capital of the world, and he doesn't like capitalism. Here's a little of what this guy believes. Cut 11.
I worked until January, and then I took time away from my job. And one of the major reasons I could do so was because I knew that if I ran out of my savings, my family would be able to support me. And that is not a luxury that many people have.
He also, as you know, in the past, does not like billionaires. He says, I don't like capitalism. He said, I'm going to raise taxes on the wealthy. He said, I'm going to freeze rents. So that's going to totally destroy. It's going to totally destroy the landlords and the owners. Matt Slater says, I've known this guy in Albany. Cut 18.
I mean, a Mamdani win here is going to propel a communist agenda all across this country. And that's why AOC, who I grew up with, had brought him down to Washington, because Democrats all across the country are concerned not just about his radical agenda, but his radical record. If you look at what he's done in the assembly where I currently serve, he stood on the state legislature floor and he actually referred to his colleagues as his comrades. When you look at the legislation that he sponsored, it is right out of Karl Marx's playbook. And so I think Democrats across the country are very concerned about what this will mean for not just their own self, but across the but for the entire country.
Do you blame them for being concerned? Because if you think about it, their ticket to success, I think, is moderation. Seeing the things that Trump is doing and deciding where you're going to be different, but not everything is bad, knowing that you took every battleground state and things like the border and common sense and pronouns were done with the DEI. So if you look at Democrats currently, among Democrats, only 19% of them approve of what they're doing in Congress. 72% disapprove. The new tone, the attitude is not being embraced. So Bernie Sanders and the squad are getting the biggest crowds. But that's never going to fly nationwide. And I think you got some moderates out there like Fetterman and like the senator from Michigan who are getting a little worried about the direction of the party. And for people like Elizabeth Warren, she can't even justify supporting this guy. Cut 15.
You know, he was asked repeatedly to condemn or whether he would condemn this phrase, globalize the intifada. Obviously, there are a lot of Jews. I'm Jewish, live in New York City. A lot of folks concerned about his inability or unwillingness to condemn that phrase. How do you feel about that phrase?
Look, it's not something I would say, and I think he has said that he will not say it. He will discourage others from saying
it. Would you condemn it yourself?
Look, I don't do that. I'm not in any part of that.
But you don't condemn the phrase?
Of course I do. Look, this is not the way we should talk.
Yes, but that's the problem. It's what he believes. So, good luck, guys. That's New York City. So we'll break down the race a little bit later in the hour. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Coming up next, we talk energy with Daniel Turner. Don't move.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're back in Pittsburgh to announce the largest package of investments in the history of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and it's not even close. I don't imagine it's too close. I don't think second is too close. That's a big statement. This afternoon, 20 leading technology and energy companies are announcing more than $92 billion of investments in Pennsylvania. But this is a really triumphant day for the people of the Commonwealth and for the United States of America.
Daniel Turner joins us now. Cast the President of the United States in Pennsylvania with Senator Dave McCormick, a guy who really understands innovation, too, talking about the need to make Pittsburgh, in some cases, the capital of new technology and make this country a place that can fuel the AI revolution. Daniel Turner, founder of Energy Advocacy Group, Power the Future, joins us now. Daniel, what was your takeaway from Wednesday?
Yeah, it's a remarkable update from where we were just a couple months ago. And I think Pennsylvania is sending a warning shot to other states. How do you get people to invest? I'm a proud New Yorker, even though I live in Virginia. New York needs $100 billion of investment. California does. So energy is everything. And we say that all the time. And AI is driven by energy. But businesses are going to go to places that have reliable, affordable energy and that create a climate that welcome them. And Pennsylvania is doing that. Kudos to Senator McCormick for making it happen. But neighboring states, my home state in New York, New Jersey, other states need to learn, what is Pennsylvania doing that we're not? Because your states are slowly dying, and that's tragic.
Well, they wouldn't even let a pipeline go through New York. The president's got a wheel and deal in order to do it. Perhaps he's going to get it. And then we know what Pennsylvania did. They fracked. And now there's talk about nuclear. Give me an idea of the practicality of nuclear energy being done quickly without all the regulation that stops people, discourages people from even getting involved with it.
Yeah, and that's what was really important about this executive order by President Trump allowing these micronuclear reactors is that it does cut through the red tape. And one huge advantage nuclear has over everything else is that nuclear is very self-contained. I'm a huge coal advocate, but if you build a coal plant, you've got to get coal to that plant. And that's railroads and trucks and infrastructure and lots of ways for environmental lunatics to stop those railroad trucks or cars. Same with natural gas. It's pipelines. But if you build a micronuclear reactor, you can build one in the tundra, and you don't need any infrastructure projects. You don't need any pipelines or transmissions lines. You just need to connect to the electric grid. So it's an awful lot faster to get online, and it is a lot more self-sustained than other forms of energy. It's why you're going to see them popping up, especially in rural and isolated communities.
I know we got to get going with, mining with coal. They're reopening some coal plants and there are some coal factories. We'll see how that goes. But are you an all of the above guy that you're for renewables if it works and you're for whatever it takes?
No, not at all. I actually don't like that phrase because I'm not for what does not work, and wind and solar do not work. And no matter how much money we pour into them, there is not a place on this planet that wind and solar have brought down costs and made a more reliable grid. Not a place on this planet. Europe is the prime example. California is another shining example. So I'm not going to be in favor with technologies that make people feel good about themselves when they are costing the American people and risking and compromising our electric grid. Wind and solar may have a bright future. My company's called Power the Future. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, but we're not living in tomorrow. We're living in today, and I only support what works today.
I know there's billions pledged, but when are we going to start seeing some production? When do you think we're going to see some groundbreaking?
Well, you got to go back to look at what happened in the first Trump term and how long it took for things to actually get online. And that was, he was inaugurated January 17. It was mid-18 when the economy really started to feel the full effects of the Trump agenda. And that's when gas hit $2.05 a gallon on average nationwide. And that's when we had record restaurant sales and retail sales, et cetera. So, it takes a little while for the economy to heat up. It's going to take a little while for these infrastructure projects to happen. The difference here, though, from the previous administration pledged tax dollars. And tax dollars is government, and government is slow. This is private sector dollars. So if you're a private corporation pledging $15 billion of your shareholders' wealth, you're going to make darn sure it happens very quickly.
What about China? Where do you think we're at with having the energy to keep the AI lead, as small as it may be?
Yeah, this is so important because AI is a growing sector, and it's going to be critical in the way we think, the way our systems think. And if China has their finger on that faster than America does, that's bad for the world. A couple of things that are really important to keep this from happening, the steel tariffs, the copper tariffs, right? We need a tremendous amount of copper in these technological infrastructure projects. And these types of tariffs prevent China from dominating these markets, and that's absolutely essential.
Right. And when you see Oracle pledging this type of money and Apple doing this money, is there, from you could tell, Daniel, is there a follow-through mechanism that this government has set up? I know Elon Musk brought that up, saying, as president, these people say stuff, but I don't know what they're doing. Have you noticed, is there a system to follow up to make sure it's not just a press conference?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping the system to do that is the free market itself, right? We look at, again, pledges that the Biden administration made. The New York Post had a big expose on this just yesterday. The pledge for electric-powered mail trucks, right? Biden pledged 50,000 of them. We built, I think, 90, and $2 billion was lost in the process. There is no mechanism for recuperating that money. There is no follow-through, because that's the way government works. But if you are Oracle, if you're Apple, the mechanism for making sure this happens is your job is on the line, and your shareholders are going to demand that it happens, or they will pull out and go somewhere else, right? I understand that companies go overseas. They go overseas if they make them a better deal than America does, but no one's going to make a better deal for America than President Trump.
What was your takeaway from the whole summit? I know Trump stayed basically the whole time. There was the who's who were in the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was remarkable to see this collaboration of government and of private sector. And it's private sector taking the lead. It's government just getting out of the darn way and allowing it to happen. And again, my biggest takeaway is that this is Pennsylvania. You know, Pennsylvania is considered a purple, maybe even a blue state. And this was led by Senator McCormick, who 5 months into the job has done more for Pennsylvania than the guy he replaced, Bob Casey, did in 18 years. I mean, $100 billion of investment is monumental, and it happened in 5 months. Why didn't the previous administration do any of this? Because they don't think this way. They don't think about private sector. They don't think about free markets. They only think about government, and government can't build anything.
Where do you stand with rare earth? Not exactly energy, but we definitely need the rare earth for this. Now we've looked like we're going to open up three mines, one in Texas, I think South Carolina, one in California, to get rare earth. But I heard the refining is the challenge.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's why I think the White House Energy Dominance Council is so important for this, because what's happening in our energy space, whether it's mining or fossil fuels or refining, we need an all-of-above understanding and an all-of-above government solution to that. So that's a great point. Why would we open a mine here in America if I can't refine the products here in America? It's just cheaper to do it elsewhere. So those are the problems facing the country, and we need solutions for it so that we're not mining in the third world with slave labor, right, with awful environmental practices. You may say, hey, look, I don't want a lithium mine in America, but is it better that we use nine-year-old kids in the Congo? Because that's what we're doing right now, right? Then that is the status quo. So if you don't want to use child and slave labor, if you don't want to pollute air and groundwater, then you want to have those extraction industries here in America, where we do it ethically, ecologically sound, morally sound.
I understand today's political environment. Republicans and Democrats don't want to give each other credit. But do you see some buy-in from Democrats on this? Because I don't see as much pushback, for example, on the nuclear thing. I see some bipartisanship. I don't see as much anger on this as I used to.
Yeah, well, if you're Josh Shapiro, the governor of the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you know, one of your crazy leftists not long ago tried to firebomb your house while you were asleep inside. And then you've got the Republican governor and the Republican senator bringing $100 billion in investment to Pennsylvania. So you may be a proud Democrat, Governor Shapiro, but what side are you going to go with, right? Are you going to go with Mom Dami, or are you going to, you know, cross the aisle? And we used to be able to cross the aisle on energy because everyone understood energy was crucial to our economy and our national security. It's only been politicized in the last couple of years. And so I think I think people who politicize energy are getting pushed out and pushed far to the left. Senator Fetterman was part of this conference as well. He's a proud Democrat, but he sees energy as good for Pennsylvania and good for America. So I think that's the direction we're going.
Daniel Turner, thanks so much. Power the future.
Always great, Brian. Thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll talk about that, too. I know John Katsimatidis, who owns WABC, one of our affiliates, he's getting into miniaturized nuclear situations. You have to have security, but not like you used to, and they get done relatively quick. And I don't see a lot of Democrats pushing back on it, which is heartening, which means the regulation might be reasonable. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think Trump is more or less at a personal high in terms of overall approval and personal approval. I think the country is feeling somewhat better off than they were feeling under the Biden administration. They're still waiting to see exactly how the economy comes out. Far and away, inflation is the number one issue. Immigration is the number two issue. I think you see, you know, maybe health care and deficits and things coming up. But you really don't see the Epstein files, on the top 10 or 15 issues here that the voters really care about.
And Mark Penn, I think a reasonable, although a longtime Clinton strategist with Hillary and Bill first, comes out and says right now the economy's going well and the president's getting a lot done. And the whole Epstein thing is really held in the blogosphere. And I've just been fascinated because a lot of people jumped on and said, you know, I support Trump. I'm against what's going on with this political correctness and the COVID vaccine. And Trump makes a lot of sense. But as soon as he does stuff like you have to make adjustments with the war in Ukraine, you got to make adjustments when it comes to a Middle East conflict. And you realize that Iran's going to be a nuclear power if we don't act quick. And they say, well, you know, the president's not telling me the truth. He said he was going to just get out of the war in Ukraine. The president's not telling the truth. He said no Middle East wars. And it's the people who don't really understand foreign policy, don't get into it, just think broad swipes that say, okay, I'm out now, or I'm disappointed, or the MAGA base is fracturing. And then they did a poll. And do you know the president's increased his support in the CNN poll and the Q poll amongst Republicans since all this stuff started happening? And yes, why? The big, beautiful bill, the attack on Iran with four other presidents elected not to do. I don't think the president walks on water. You should always be able to criticize him. But I think you should do your research before you just criticize and say, well, he says he wasn't going to do that. Well, that was before Vladimir Putin has been totally belligerent and hostile and deceptive and lying and making the president look bad when he went out of his way to take political risks. That's why there was a change. So that's important. So when it comes to what the president's doing, I think he should stay in a role, not even bring this other stuff up at all. And for Democrats, they got to realize that the people that are having the most popularity is the oligarchy tour with AOC and Bernie Sanders. And now you got this upstart taking all the oxygen out of the mayoral primary in New York City. So the other big story that caught me totally by surprise. Now, I personally really into late night television. In fact, we had to do this thing in college. You have to have a senior thesis and a senior project. I chose history of late night television because I loved it. I still do. I did. And I remember I had a chance to talk to Jack Parr on the phone. I had one-on-one with David Letterman when I was in college, when he was still doing the late night show on NBC. And then got this guy David Wedick who hired Carson. And then Steve Allen I had a chance to meet. Later on in California, but I was able to get information from his bio when he talked about being the first Tonight Show host. And I find the whole thing fascinating. And of course, we remember the drama with Jay Leno being chosen over David Letterman by the NBC executives. Letterman decided to go to CBS. They redo the CBS Theater, the Ed Sullivan Theater, just down the road from us here at 48th and 6th. And he comes out and he's winning. But then after Hugh Grant does his big interview, after picking up the hooker, Leno jumps in front and pretty much never lets go. So the Tonight Show getting about a 4 or 5. David Letterman getting about a 3, 5, 4. Retires. Leno steps aside. The controversy with Conan O'Brien made everybody look bad. They go to Fallon. The numbers drop. They start one on ABC with Jimmy Kimmel. The numbers were never strong. They almost canceled him. And then they have Stephen Colbert take over for David Letterman. And for the most part, the way I understand it, his ratings are first. Now, Gutfeld literally doubles them at this point. Gutfeld gets like a 3.5. But Colbert, last week, for example, gets a 2.4. Kimmel gets a 1.7. Jimmy Fallon, a 1.1. Pathetic. But yet, Stephen Colbert finds out Wednesday he's canceled. Not just him, the show. Listen.
Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. And yeah, I share your feelings. It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
So I don't know which worse. You know, like if someone walks up to you and says, I'm breaking up with you because I'm gay, I'd probably like that best. Or, you know, rather than leave you for somebody else, I would hate that most. Hey, Stephen Colbert, you're fired. We're bringing somebody else in. But they got rid of their late night show after the late show. He's gone. They never replaced it. They run repeats. And now CBS says we consider Stephen Colbert irreplaceable. We will retire the Late Show franchise at the time. We are proud that Stephen called CBS home. He said nice things. But you listen to what Jimmy Kimmel says. Jimmy Kimmel says, I love you, Stephen. F you, CBS. And then he goes on to rant and make fun of the Big Bang Show and Sheldon. And I don't know what is wrong with him. But I think this is a lot to do with 2 weeks ago or last week. He ripped Paramount for cutting a deal with President Trump for their inaccurate, deceptive editing of the Kamala Harris interview for 60 Minutes. And George Stephanopoulos had to apologize, and they paid a huge fine to Donald Trump for calling Donald Trump a rapist. So Colbert thought it would be a good idea to rip Paramount. 2 weeks later, he gets canceled. Now, they're selling it, so maybe there's something to do with it, or maybe they say, listen, I don't enjoy when an employee rips me while I'm paying them probably $20 million a year. Gone. Seth Meyers is up in 28. Jimmy Fallon is up in 28. Kimmel's up at the end of the year. And for Jimmy Kimmel to say, hey, even though my ratings are terrible, I'm taking off the whole summer, but I'm going to go rip another network? I think that's absolutely insane. But it shows an arrogance. You think you're bigger than the company. I never have thought that. You know, I don't care how powerful you are. You're not bigger than the company. And that's one thing pretty clear in broadcasting. Remember, Ronan McDaniel, NBC rose up and said, we don't want her as a contributor. And they fired Ronan McDaniel.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade here, 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. I'll tell you, it's the center of the universe these days because of this mayoral primary that just rocked everybody. Has me looking at the polls and answering tons of questions from around the country because I live here. Meanwhile, the president today is going to be participating in a signing ceremony. They accomplished something else, signing the Genius Act. 100 Democrats went along with it to give crypto some type of structure. And the president participates in a dinner with Republican senators who he's extremely pleased with, or at least outside Tom Tillis, extremely pleased with. And look, Susan Collins, they know, is in a tough situation in a Democratic state, and Murkowski did give him the big vote for the big, beautiful bill. Trace Gallagher is going to be with us, his wildly successful show at 11. And, of course, we'll take your calls. Quick reminder before we go to the big three, I can't wait to see everyone in Dallas, Texas. August 23rd, we're getting close to selling out the entire floor. So don't be last. History, Liberty, and Laughs. We're doing it with Fox Nation. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
This is not serious at all. This is a benign issue. It's something that happens as you get older. It happens to most people at some point as they age. This is a real non-issue. Health-wise, he's in great health.
That is the words of Dr. Ronny Jackson, current doctor, I think, of the President of the United States, and former doctor to Obama, Bush, and Trump. He is saying that Trump's got some health issues. We'll go over it. A bizarre situation with an Epstein eruption. We'll talk about the health of this administration.
Number two.
Mom Donnie, what do you make of him, and how worried or concerned are you about his policies?
I'm very concerned about his policies. His policies aren't going to work. They're going to get cops hurt.
Who wouldn't be? Because he doesn't like cops, and he wants social workers to go to domestic disputes. Marxist Mondani, the Dems' direction, Biden's auto pen have all combined to crater the party's popularity, and the remedy's worse than the disease. I'll explain.
Number one.
The American dream is back, and everyday families are already reaping the benefits of this incredible economic turnaround in just 6 months.
That is the press secretary. Economic breakthrough. Prices heading down. Trump records two more economic legislative wins. Money is clawed back for the second time in history out of our budget as tariffs produce the first monthly surplus in years. I'm not kidding. It's an economic story that the president would want to trumpet. Gas prices are at $3.16 per average per gallon. That's a 10% decrease from the same time in 2024. Inflation is at 2.9%. The president wants it closer to 2%. Understood. Increase since May, 0.6% in terms of retail sales. That's very low. The tariffs have generated $100 billion. And only two countries have retaliated. The international financial agreements have brought in $2 trillion. These are some of the things that the president is extremely happy about. And Congress is acting. Yesterday, they called back over $9 billion. Cut to.
The Republican Party and President Trump and everybody that works on our side has promised fiscal responsibility and fiscal discipline, and we're delivering on those promises again tonight. I just signed our H.R. 4, which is our rescissions package, the first of what we believe will be multiple rescissions packages. That's our plan. I'm delighted to send that over to the president's desk for signature, and he'll sign that quickly.
So we're going to see where this goes. It's pretty impressive. So they put about $9 billion. Now, people are going to say you kill Big Bird, Sesame Street. That's fine. 1% came from NPR. 15% came from PBS. Look, if you're going to have a biased news service, I know it's service small town and I love radio, but you're going to get this type of backlash. Republicans since Reagan have been talking about the problem with PBS and NPR. They're saying, why are we financing this with federal funds when they just go out of their way to go to bat for Democrats? It's like reading the New York Times, which is not okay. Now, I appreciate the New York Times international coverage and their reach, but not their biasness that pops up in their reporting. And when it pops up at PBS, we're not asked to finance the New York Times and Washington Post. But 15% of their budget comes from the federal government at PBS, and just 1% goes from NPR. So we'll see how that goes. On top of that, they cut some other programs that needed to go, and I think they're going to go back a couple more times. It's a way to get your discretionary spending in order. Now, the tough thing is you say, I pass a budget, should be staying, you know, you should keep the budget. But to go back and get our fiscal house in order at $36 trillion, I don't think is too much to ask. So where do we stand? And how does this play into politics? I think the president's on a winning streak. The big, beautiful bill is now a law. The rescission package is now through. Cryptocurrency now has a format to it. The president's winning in court consistently. The border has been totally sealed. He's able to bomb out the nuclear program of Iran, the extent of which is still being evaluated. And I think by going to his finest leadership hour, I think is understanding that Putin can't be reasoned with. Not the same guy that he thought he was dealing with. So he's made an adjustment and cut a deal with Ukraine. Get this, where we only have about 100,000 drones. We need millions. And guess who's great at it? Maybe the best in the world, Ukraine. They're going to start selling us drones for other weaponry that they need. How is that not the perfect Trump deal? You're good at something, we're good at something, let's deal rather than give away. Here's Governor Tim Walz. He thinks Democrats' strategy going forward is to point out, I guess the president's not accomplishing anything. Cut four.
We can also pay attention that he hasn't done a damn thing about prices. He hasn't done a damn thing about, you know, the economy. He hasn't done any of that. We have to figure out how to simultaneously hold him accountable, flood the zone with that, but then come up with policies like this. I said, when we come back again, we better fix health care where people don't have to deal with insurance companies and fight with them. Because, look, I'm proud that we have protections for pre-existing conditions, but what good's it do you if you can't get in or your hospital's closed?
Amen to that.
Doesn't do anything.
Wall Street Journal has a story today, Obamacare, nothing to do with Trump, and their exchanges. So if you qualify for Obamacare, you go to your state exchanges, all the prices and revenues and penalties and premiums are going up because it's not making ends meet. So they have to raise rates. So Obamacare, that was supposed to make health care affordable, isn't. And you can't blame Trump for that. He didn't do a skinny bill, didn't rescind it. It's not adding up. But I think that Tim Walz, you're missing the point. I just told you the prices are coming down. You had eggs up so high. They're so low now that no one brings it up anymore. I wish that inflation, so as the president, was closer to 2.5 than 2.7, but that's where it's at. 2.9, I should say. That's where it's at. But I think you're going at the wrong place. I think that John Kerry and Bernie Sanders were onto something and said you don't have a country without a border. Why? They're acknowledging that Trump has sealed the border. And the American people, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and dare I say California, it makes them happy to have law and no disorder at the border, wouldn't you? But then you want to bring up that you don't like the aggressiveness they're picking up illegal immigrants. I don't mind it. One judge says, I consider Home Depot a no-go zone for ICE. Why? Did you see some of the video out there today of ICE chasing down these illegal immigrant criminals who happen to be at Home Depot? It's nuts. So on immigration, I think the president's got a huge win on that. But I'm just wondering what the Democratic strategy is to fight the president, because to fight him on his strength seems bizarre. Where they stand right now is they're looking at the extremes. It's winning, for example, running for that vacant Senate seat in Michigan, running for the mayor, a mayor position in Minnesota from Sudan. These are all Cold War, anti-Cold War, I should say the pro-communist, pro-socialist guys that think they have better answers than capitalism. Mark Halperin on the ticket forward. And to me, it would make me feel better as American, even though Republicans would not be happy, to go to the middle. Cut 29.
Parties go through this, right, where there's the extreme wing of the parties has the energy, and the more moderate wing says, well, we're not going to win elections running communists and socialists. But this is different because the party is so far to the left, and the folks in the center don't have the infrastructure or the ideas or the cojones to stand up to the extreme wing of the party. So we'll see what happens in the midterms. We'll see what happens in the next presidential. But there's a lot of humor to it, but it's deadly serious. If you're a Democrat who wants to win elections rather than lose them, it's a big problem. No, and I don't know who's going to prevail, but I'd bet on the left right now.
Yeah, and that's not good for the country. It's really not good for their party. Doesn't mean you're not going to win extremely liberal places with horrible mayors in Chicago and New York and Philadelphia. San Francisco changed out their mayor. I'm not sure that's going to help. The worst has to be Los Angeles, totally incompetent. So in New York, this guy Mamdani wins, but according to a new poll, wins the Democratic primary. A new poll from Harris says Mamdani only up by 3, Cuomo by on Cuomo, and then Curtis Sliwa is just down by 4, which means within the margin of error. Eric Adams, who's going to be on with me on One Nation, my lead guest on Sunday at 10 o'clock, he's got 13, but now he's got two major endorsements from the Police Benevolent Association, police foundations, as well as a lot of money flowing in because nobody wants really part of Cuomo. They thought he'd be a shoo-in, you can't avoid him, but they see how flawed he is, how low energy, and now he's against billionaires. He shows you he's a total chameleon, just like he was during the pandemic. One minute he's standing up, the next minute he's caving in, and then, of course, writing a $5 million book for a $5 million advance. So where are they going with this? What is happening? Where's the vulnerability? Mark Halperin goes on to say the New York City mayor's race is now a fight. Cut 30.
We've got some very liberal mayors. The mayor of Boston's pretty liberal, and she's kind of a role model for Mondami. I think the New York race, which I had thought was a foregone conclusion after Mondami became the nominee, I think it's a contest now. There's a ceiling on his support. New York, you know, if you look at the last 30 years, Republican Rudy Giuliani, Michael Bloomberg, a Republican, and then an independent, they served five terms.
Yeah, well, you would have in Bloomberg won Republican, independent. I think he ended up a Democrat. But when they were out there doing their job, you don't really think, when it comes to the mayor situation, you're not really thinking liberal. In fact, I felt like Bloomberg was fighting the left-wing city council most of the time. And then you had a, I don't think you had super majorities in Albany, so it was a little bit different. But Democrats have this guy, Mamdani, who they say has got the cool factor, so it's hard to marginalize him. No, it isn't. You could be cool and diabolical. That's what he is. Listen to some of the things that are coming up that he has said in the past. It is absolutely embarrassing. I mean, he has come out and basically said, newly resurfaced clip shows Mamdani discussing what would happen if he ran out of money. I want you to hear this. Here's Mondami talking about his parents helping him out if something was to happen. Cut 11.
I worked until January, and then I took time away from my job. And one of the major reasons I could do so was because I knew that if I ran out of my savings, my family would be able to support me. And that is not a luxury that many people have.
You proud of that? Because your crazy dad professor from Columbia and your mom can give you money, so I was able to take some time off. So he's asked in various podcasts about things like prison. Now, you think one of the issues when it comes to prison would be, like, you know, should they be privately owned, the beds, the population? But instead, should we even have prison?
Are prisons obsolete?
Whew, coming through with the quotes, coming through with the titles of the books. I have to read that, actually. I haven't read that as yet. But I think that, frankly, I mean, what purpose do they serve?
Right.
I think we have to ask ourselves that, which is that, you know, I think a lot of people who defend the carceral state, they defend the idea of it and the way it makes them feel. They're not defending the reality of it and the practices that are part and parcel of it.
Yeah, what do we need? Yeah, what purpose do prison serve? I have no idea. Give me a second. I don't know, they get criminals off the streets and they're not choking you to death and stabbing you in the top of the head like the ones on subways. I don't know, to keep murderers down to maybe less than a dozen because we don't let murderers continue to murder. I don't know what good prisons are doing. We've had them since the beginning of time, but this guy doesn't think we need him. Good. Is there a system, he says, on housing? This guy is for the abolition of private property. He says if there is any system that would guarantee each person housing, whether you call it abolition of private property or you call it a statewide housing guarantee, it is preferable to what's going on right now. People try to play gotcha about all these kinds of thoughts. Look, I care more about whether somebody has a home. Look, there's a situation where you have a home. There are trailer parks. There are rentals. There are people that want to live on boats. Not everybody has a right to live in the richest, most lucrative place in the country. That would be Manhattan. And then there are places where you go out in Brooklyn that used to be bad are now great, and now people go into revitalized Queens and Long Island City. That's just in this area. No one has a right to those places. It's up to you to find a career that's going to be rewarding enough and an education that will allow you the opportunity to be lucrative enough for you to be able to have that first home, the first rental that ends up in a lease. And maybe the long-term lease turns into a long-term investment. And then you get a house and you move on. That's called the American process. This guy's just not into it. He just doesn't care. And that's okay with the socialist. Listen to Brian Yenis talk to the president of the Detectives Endowment Association. This guy wants to defund the police, flat out, let alone zero cooperation with ICE. Cut 12.
What about the leading candidate right now, Mamdani? What do you make of him, and how worried or concerned are you about his policies?
I'm very concerned about his policies. His policies aren't going to work. They're going to get cops hurt. Okay? Defunding police, worrying about overtime, that's going to basically hurt cops. And that's a shame. What he wants to do with domestics, not happening. It's not happening. People are going to get hurt out there. It's dangerous. His policies are very dangerous.
You know what he's talking about, domestics? He said on domestic disputes, you should send social workers, not cops. By far, I hear from every cop, the most dangerous thing that could ever go on. When we come back, I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Trace Gallagher at the bottom of the hour. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
You know that one friend who somehow knows everything about money? Yeah, now imagine they live in your phone. Say hey to Experian, your big financial friend. It's the app that helps you check your FICO score, find ways to save, and basically feel like a financial genius. And guess what? It's totally free. So go on, download the Experian app. Trust me, having a BFF like this is a total game changer.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In recent weeks, President Trump noted mild swelling in his lower legs. In keeping with routine medical care and out of an abundance of caution, this concern was thoroughly evaluated by the White House medical unit. The president underwent a comprehensive examination, including diagnostic vascular studies. Bilateral lower extremity venous Doppler ultrasounds were performed and revealed chronic venous insufficiency, a benign and common condition, particularly in individuals over the age of 70. Importantly, there was no evidence of deep vein thrombosis or arterial disease.
All right, good. So interesting. I look on Drudge. It's always so negative to Trump. And I see Donald Trump's ankles are swollen and his hand is bruised. What's the deal? And I'm thinking to myself, wow, they're going out of their way just to go after this guy. Well, it turns out he does. He says from people constantly crushing his hands on handshakes. And also, by the way, when he first burst on the scene, famously, he didn't want to shake hands. He thought there's too many ways to spread germs. He kind of just got over that quickly. But he said he takes aspirin so it thins out his blood and it makes you bruise easy. And I've heard that before. And I know, too, they said, I don't get it, though, because there's two diagnoses. Number one, they say walk the course instead of taking the cart and that'll help. Then other people say the swelling comes from standing up too much. Which one is it? So it's certainly not for sleeping too much because he doesn't do any of that. But I love the honesty and transparency. Got swollen ankles. Here's why. It stops all the speculation. Trace Gallagher next.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know, he was asked repeatedly to condemn or whether he would condemn this phrase, globalize the intifada. Obviously, there are a lot of Jews, I'm Jewish, live in New York City. A lot of folks concerned about his inability or unwillingness to condemn that phrase. How do you feel about that phrase?
Look, it's not something I would say, and I think he has said that he will not say it. He will discourage others from saying it.
Would you condemn it yourself?
Look, I don't do that. I'm not in any part of that.
But you don't condemn the phrase?
Of course I do. Look, this is not the way we should talk. If this encourages violence in any way, then I am opposed to it. I am a no-violence person. I think it's a very, very bad idea.
Globalized intifada is a violent phrase. It means globalize what we saw happen in Israel, but make it a nationwide thing. If Senator Elizabeth Warren does not want to talk about Mamdani, who happens to be the most interesting thing in the Democratic Party and the most challenging, don't do the interview. Who told her to do CNBC? That's her conversation with Andrew Ross Sorkin, who says, hey, I'm Jewish. Not too happy about this guy winning the Democratic primary. What's it like 3,000 miles away where Trace Gallagher hosts his show as anchor of Fox News at night, weekdays at 11 o'clock Eastern time? So, Trace, how much are you into this story?
We cover it every night. I mean, it's a big story because it's a big deal in the Democratic Party, and you bring up the whole globalize the intifada. And for the record, we should note that that Zoran Mamdani never said the phrase, but he backs the phrase, and he backs the idea of the phrase, and that's the thing. And that's his whole point is he's like, listen, I think this is about world equity and equality. That's what he thinks the phrase means. And everybody else is like, no, it means basically, you know, you're in favor of eradicating the Jews. And that's exactly what the phrase means. Intifada is holy war. It's this whole thing where you're like, hey, I back the idea, but I would never say the phrase. It's the same thing, Brian, the very same thing. And the fact that until he met with those business leaders a couple of days ago and said, OK, I'm going to back away from the phrase. I'm going to back away and I'm going to discourage people from using it. You know, like you're going to discourage people from saying, let's kill all the Jews.
Right.
I mean, what are you kidding me? You know, I'm thinking I'm going to discourage people from saying they want to eradicate the Jewish population.
Well, let me ask something, Trace. Wouldn't this guy be a dream to run against?
Oh, my God.
Why would Cuomo not bringing this up? I mean, I 2 weeks before the primary, I thought Cuomo was up by 15, 20 points. And I talked to somebody involved in local politics, and they said, no, he's not. It's one or two. I go, no. I've never seen anything close. So he must have got the real polls, but yet he never thought this guy wants to legalize billionaires. He wants to be head of a city that is the financial capital of the world, doesn't like capitalism.
Yeah.
This guy wants to arrest Netanyahu and Modi if they come to town. Why do analysts have to do this, not an opponent?
Yeah, I mean, the you're exactly right. We went through and did every one of his points, his policies. And you think there's probably 15 or 16 of them, from defund the police to no cash bail to building communes, and, you know, to kind of gathering up all public property and building communes with them. And every single one of his policies has been tried before. The no cash bail was tried in San Francisco and Los Angeles. They had to get rid of the DAs because it was such a disaster. Defund the police, as we all know, was tried. He wants to try it again. It was a disaster. Every one of his policies been tried.
Well, could free go buses. Wrong with that?
Right. I mean, city-run grocery stores? I mean, the city is so good at doing things, Brian. I mean, nobody does anything better than the city. Who's going to have the best grocery store in the world? Not Bezos. It's going to be the city of New York.
So this guy just answers every question when he's asked, and he's not even trying to evade it and say, you know, I was young.
Right.
Until I got into the assembly, you know, he's not trying to know what they're doing now. They're just trying to keep him away from people.
Right.
So they bring him out the back door. They tell deceptive meetings. We already went through that with one Democrat, didn't we? And he was called the former president of the United States.
The funniest thing about it is when you look at his handlers, they're looking out in the audience, they're looking at the media, and they know the next media person who's going to ask a tough question. So what they're doing now is they're preemptively pulling him off stage. It's not a matter of, well, we're going to let him answer a question. If he gets in trouble, we'll pull him off. Now they're like, oh, so-and-so. Oh, Joe Smith. He doesn't ask good questions. Let's pull. We're done. We're out. And you think, wait a minute, you are literally trying to kind of manipulate the media, what questions he answers, who he answers with. In this gathering with business leaders, they put him out the back door. The gathering with lawmakers, they paper over the windows of the thing. There's no media allowed. And you think, come on, you look at the most transparent administration that we've ever seen in the Trump administration, and then you go back to Mamdani, and then you go back to the Biden administration. There was no transparency. This Mamdani thing has no transparency with the Democratic Party because they're not transparent, and they keep going after Trump for like, oh my God, he's doing this and he's doing this. Yeah, but he's laying everything on the table except the Epstein files, which apparently, if he's not laying anything on the table, the question is, what is there to lay on the table? I don't want to change subjects on you, but, you know,
I'll go back to that. I want you to hear this guy, Matt Slater. He was on Fox and Friends first. You would only have 3 hours sleep if you stayed up to watch Fox and Friends first.
Right.
So here is Matt Slater talking about who this guy is that he works with in the assembly. Cut 19.
Do you think that he's somebody that would moderate their positions if he is elected into office? Sometimes you could be very idealistic until reality sets in.
I don't think so. And we saw his meeting recently with CEOs here in New York City, and he was very clear that he's not walking back his policies or his beliefs. And so he's already showing us the fact that he is an ideologue. He has no intention of walking back his radical policy whatsoever. And yes, he can be very charming. And, you know, when he's here, he can charm the birds out of the trees. But at the end of the day, he has to be able to perform and he has to be able to deliver for New York. And that agenda, that communist agenda, and the president called him a communist the other day, and I think he's 100% right, that just won't fly.
No, but he's perfect. If you're, I hate it for the country, but if you're a Republican, you got to love this because this is President Trump is going to make this guy the face of the party.
Yeah, but is it a good thing for the nation is the question, because it moves the Democratic Party far left. And if you go before October 7th, Zoran Mamdani is not possible. Zoran Mamdani's candidacy, his mayoral bid is not possible. But after October 7th, we see in this country that all of a sudden anti-Semitism and these rallies and globalize the Intifada and from the river to the sea, these are all phrases that become normalized. They fight for and say, this is the way, you know, we're just fighting for the rights of Palestinians. We're fighting for the rights of people in Gaza. No, you're not. You're fighting against the people in Israel. That's the whole thing. And becomes normalized at Columbia University, at UCLA, across the country. You have these protests and young people start to gravitate toward this. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a normal conversation to now say it's OK to speak out. It's free speech. It's not hate speech to say let's eradicate the Jews. It's free speech, and when that becomes normalized, people like Zoran Mamdani become legitimate contenders.
So let's go what you brought up before about what's happened with the President of the United States. So the President's on a roll. I mean, the cryptocurrency legislation, the clawback, the big beautiful law, which is now going, the shutdown of the border. You see the prices coming down, inflation slightly higher, but not much higher, the revenue coming in off tariffs. So people are like, well, this Epstein thing has been a distraction. And I'm sure you covered last night two polls that are out, CNN and the Q poll. When asked, what do you think of the president, Republicans? When Republicans thought of the president prior to Epstein, 86% approved. After, 88. Q poll started at 87 before. Now, after this came out, 90. That's a Q poll. Doesn't really lean right. Having said that, Democrats see an opportunity. Van Jones, disappointed in this because he's usually somewhat level-headed, cut 26.
This is a president that's in trouble. He has lied to his base. He told them that he was going to do something he's afraid to do. Why is Trump afraid to release these documents? That is the question. I have been defending Trump, actually saying it's inconceivable that anything in these documents is going to hurt Trump because Biden would have released them. Mm. But he's been acting
so... Do you still think that's true?
Well, now he's acting so weird. Trump is acting so bizarre.
So has that...
You're holding your head.
when Van Jones comes out and he says, he starts with, this president is in trouble. In trouble from who? From whom is this president in trouble? His, as you said, Republicans, 88% are now supporting him. That number is up. Like I tell everybody, listen, get off X, get off social media, because, yeah, if you go on X, you're like, oh, my God, Trump might have a day or two left in office, and that's it, because everybody's coming for him. I mean, they could literally walk in there and take him and walk him out. You think, have you lost your minds? Look at the numbers. Talk to real Americans. Go to the middle of the country. Get out of New York. Get out of Los Angeles. Go to the middle of the country. Go to Florida and find out what the real feeling is over Donald Trump, and you will find out, and you'll walk away like, dang, that Xing is a bad barometer for what's happening in the world. And for Van Jones to say, oh, he's in trouble because he's not releasing what? What? He's now come out and said, what do you want released? What would you like us to give you?
Right.
Did they hype it up? We said it on our show many times. Listen, Pam Bondi went out and she made it sound like there was something nefarious, right? She's had a couple of comments, and we played them again, and made it sound like there was something interesting, and she was going to get to the bottom of it. So she kind of ginned this up, and then there was nothing there. I'm not saying there was ever anything there, or that she said there was ever anything there, but she sold it. It was like, we sell a good tease, right? We're trying to get you to the next break. Pam Bondi is trying to get us to the next break so that we'd keep watching, and she was going to deliver the goods in the next break.
A couple of things. When he says the president's acting weird, that's not the right word. The president's ticked, and here's why. Because he's President Trump. Haven't you figured it out yet? For example, do you remember when Joe Biden melted down at the famously in the June debate?
Yes.
President Trump, after a few days, was ticked off. Why? He's saying, no one's talking about the job I did.
Right.
They're talking about Biden melting down. And that's the way Trump is. He's a competitive guy. So he's saying, win, win. Pass the bill on July 4th. Everything's going. The border shut down. I'm on a roll. And all you guys are talking about this. He's ticked. But if you think that this guy's worried— after the lawsuits that came his way, the Mueller report, the impeachment, the investigation to January 6th. You think he's worried about this? Yep. Are you crazy?
That's the whole thing, is he's on such a winning streak that this is what they're grasping onto. The Democrats are like, we've tried everything else.
But they're not interested in this.
No.
That's the problem. The Democrats aren't interested.
They couldn't care less about any of this, but they're thinking, is it negative against Trump when they get in there and they paper over the windows and they start talking? They're like, is this going to hurt Trump? And they're like, I don't know, but you know what? We got nothing else. This Iran thing went his way. The tariffs that everybody, including the Wall Street Journal, said the sky was going to fall. That was the end of it. We're in a depression. We might as well just pack up and go home now. It didn't happen. And like you talked about inflation, inflation was up 0.2%, Brian, up 0.2%. And it was in triple block letters on the thing. Inflation was up 0.2% in a month where they have to go back over and redo the numbers sometime at the end of the month. You have no idea what the specifics are, and you're building it up like, look, it's a big deal. Inflation, here we go again. That's how desperate they are. Here's how desperate they are. The guy who was Biden's border advisor came out with an article this week saying, here's my ideas on how to fix the border. How to fix the border? It's fixed. Believe it or not, it's fixed. He gave this whole list of how we need new laws and this thing. You're like, you are grasping when you say, hey, I've got a way to fix the border.
So it was just so funny. The memes that followed up with that, they said, yeah, Humpty Dumpty called. He wants to tell you how to sit on the wall.
Right.
So
I mean, it's like Dan Marino telling Tom Brady how to win a Super Bowl. Right. Hey, listen, Tommy, here's how you do it. Here's my strategy. Brady's like, I don't need help. Yeah. Right.
Retail sales are down 0.6%. So you have gas prices year to year down 10%, down to a very feasible, plausible $3.16. With everything they got going on energy, do you really think that those prices are going to go down much further? Tariffs have generated over $100 billion. International financial investment is up around $2 trillion. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that it's not hard. Yet you have Tim Walz saying this guy's not doing anything to drive down prices.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it was like the old egg debate. They had this thing on MSNBC, the egg debate, where one of the craziest people on MSNBC comes out and says, oh, egg prices are up. Egg prices are up. And you think, what? What are you talking about? Well, year over year, it was on CNN, and the CNN host is like, they're up. You can see year over year, they're up. And the guy, the conservative guy on CNN is like, wait a minute. He's been in office for 6 months. You're telling me you're going back to 6 months before Biden was out of office and saying egg prices are up? Did you look at the prices of eggs when Biden left office and the prices now? They're down 35%. That's the whole measure here. The year-over-year thing, it was up the next month. It was down. It was up, 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 up.
Trace Kelly, just your opinion quick before I let you go. And then what else are you doing today?
I'm doing Outnumbered. Figured. I got Kudlow with, I think
I'll
you're
be with
Timon.
You.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're coming on Kudlow. Right. And then I've got my show, Fox News at night.
And then on Sunday nights, you're going to watch 10 One Nation, right?
I always watch One Nation.
It's 7 o'clock.
I haven't missed it in years. So
right.
That's
and
goes without saying.
Of course, I don't believe you, but I'm going to take that as gospel.
Goes without saying.
Trace, your opinion. President's going to look at the podcasters, the bloggers. Uh-huh. The social media stars who came aboard late, the Von, what's his name? Theo Von and others.
Theo Von James?
You have these other guys, these fringe guys who got behind the president. He's going to look at him differently now.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at this and go, guys, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I put two of your guys, Dan Bongino, I put Kash Patel, maybe Pam Bondi shouldn't have said, I got this on my desk, misinterpreted, whatever. That was a mistake. But I put my guys on the things of most interest, RFK, JFK, MLK, this whole thing with Epstein. And now you're going to jump ship and I'm not worthy of your loyalty? I feel like he's like, I'm done. I'm 79 years old. I've already been shot. I got three more years of this.
I'm telling you, Brian, tell me if I'm wrong here. It feels dossier-ish to me. It really does. It feels like there's something that's not been corroborated.
I'm not into it. I have to force myself to be into
me
it.
Too. I look at this stuff and I'm like, it feels very like we're going down a road that nobody's got evidence and nobody can really present anything. And not to indict Pam Bondi, because if I said that her voice kind of brought up like, oh, like she knew something. She said, I haven't reviewed these documents. I haven't reviewed them. So there, she had no idea it was in there. It was only the inflection in her voice to people like, well, she sounded like she saw something. I'm telling you, if there was something there, we would have known about it because the Democrats loathe Donald Trump, and they would have looked at this. Biden would have looked at this and said, No, let's release it all.
Watch tonight, Fox News at night at 11 o'clock Eastern time.
8 o'clock in the West.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Thank you, brother.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Following Fox's initial donation to the Kerr County Flood Relief Fund, our generous viewers have answered the call to action across all Fox platforms and have helped raise $7 million. Visit go.fox/TX Flood Relief to support relief and rebuilding efforts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know who this is, everybody? This is California Senator Adam Schiff. Hey, we're six months into Trump's second term. How's it different this time?
Fundamentally, it's different because Donald Trump was much less successful in the first term in creating a climate of fear. This is what he's after. He wants to make the law firms afraid. He wants to make universities afraid. He wants to make immigrants afraid. He wants to make citizens afraid. He wants to make news organizations, CBS and Paramount, afraid. He wants to make ABC afraid. And he is succeeding.
And by the way, did he even bring up? I'm sure you guys didn't watch. But you know who, by the way, do you know who substituted for Jimmy Kimmel last night? Jelly Roll.
Jelly Roll.
Yeah, he was funny.
You know what Jelly Roll is going to be setting up for?
What?
He's going to be actually wrestling for the WWE in SummerSlam. So they actually did a part. They brought the storyline to the show.
They did? Did he get in a fight?
Yeah. They had Jake Paul pop out, or Paul, the other Paul, and Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. And they had a battle on the set and wow. Setting up their match. Their tag team match.
I should have stayed up later. But Stephen Colbert, just to finish up this, told Adam Schiff, I'm done, and he comes in right after. Adam Schiff, did he bring up the lawsuit at all? That Adam Schiff evidently has been accused of lying about his main residence, said it was Maryland, get a significant tax break, and that's mortgage fraud. So remember, no one's above the law. Didn't we know that? Stephen Colbert ripped Paramount 2 weeks ago. That has a lot to do, in my view, that he's out now.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Shannon Bream is coming back. She took 3 weeks off. I guess she's mad at me. She's going to be back today to explain herself. She's the anchor of Fox News Sunday. It's going to be exciting. Ian Fletcher is going to be here at the bottom of the hour, co-author of Industrial Policy for the United States, winning the competition. Good jobs, high-value industries. I love it. And then Brian Kelly, one half of Florida Georgia Line, now on his own, doing exceedingly well. And he was at the RNC, I saw, doing major events. Brian Kelly is going to be with us. He's a great friend of the show. And we're also, I see the President of the United States just weighed in on the late night firing of Stephen Colbert. He put this on Truth Social. I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. His talent was even less than his ratings. I hear Jimmy Kimmel is next, even has less talent than Colbert. Greg Gutfeld is better than all of them combined, including that moron on NBC who ruined the once great Tonight Show. President was a constant. He was a constant figure with Letterman. And that was the Late Show. When he split off, when he didn't get the Tonight Show, did his own thing in the Ed Sullivan Theater. And then for Colbert to get canceled, then Paramount says, he did a great job, but we're canceling the show, not him. So, look, could he go to The Daily Show? I guess Paramount owns The Daily, Comedy Central, too. So The Daily Show feels as though they could be on the block. I think they say it's a financial thing, but they're not getting any ratings. You're getting a 2-4? We get a 2-4 at 6 in the morning on Fox News Channel. Now, keep in mind, you can't delay the Fox and Friends. Can't. Because by that time, Hemmer's on, the news has changed. You don't delay. On The Tonight Show, every network, you know what you do? You delay. So the Today Show on the West Coast will not air until 6 in the morning, and it'll already be 9 o'clock if you do the math. And I did the math in my head, and I deserve a lot of credit for that. Joining us now is Shannon Bream, anchor of Fox News Sunday. Shannon, welcome.
I don't do math. That's why I went to law school, because right. I was told there would be no math.
It was so easy.
Yes, it was so easy and just joyful. Those 3 years were just so much fun. It was kind of like a vacation.
Well, my son graduated law school in May.
Congrats.
And he has never been more stressed getting ready for the bar June 28th.
He's going to nail it.
I hope so.
Well, he did June 28th.
But, I mean, he takes things seriously, but.
It's a lot of pressure.
I guess because you never feel like you're studying enough, right? Is that how you feel?
And you don't want to be like JFK Jr., like you have to take it two or three or whatever times it was. Like, nobody wants that hanging around their neck. It's difficult. You want to get it one and done.
Right. I shouldn't probably have brought that up because if he doesn't pass, people are going to ask me forever.
But you know what? It does happen. And listen, when I joined my firm, I joined after I'd taken the bar, but we didn't have results yet. And so I actually asked the partners, like, well, what happens if I don't pass on the first time? And they said, that's never happened to any of our associates.
Oh.
So then I really felt like, oh, my God, I'm going to get fired if I don't pass this thing. So, but your son is going to kill it. I have no doubt.
He did good.
He sounds like a conscientious student.
I hope so. I think you would like him. You like him better than me, I'm pretty sure.
Well, like most people.
Right. But why did you take off from our show for a few weeks? Pete's upset. Eric can't shake it off.
I know.
I'm taking
it
better than
anyone else. Weekly chats with Pete before I got on the air with you. I was out of town the last couple of weeks, and it just wasn't working for me. It wasn't feasible.
So let's talk about Stephen Colbert. Are you shocked?
I'm not, but you know what? I'm so not into the late night television thing.
Oh, I am.
I know you're not because it's like the only time you get.
I know,
but I'm
so into it. So, could I tell you something, Shannon?
I feel like sure.
I did my senior project. I had to do a senior thesis and a senior project. You never could have passed my school, by the way. I chose the history of late night television.
You did. So you're the expert.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading Steve Allen books and finding Jack Parr in Connecticut, and I was really into it.
The OGs.
But it's over. It's depressing.
Well, but don't you feel like, okay, time moves on. Younger people have different outlets for entertainment.
I know.
They're streaming. They're on TikTok. They love their podcasts. They love the Theo Vaughns. They love all that kind of stuff. I don't know that the format of late night television is really their thing anymore.
I just think also when you open up and you just rip one guy, not even a party, one guy all the time.
Right.
I mean, it becomes a part of – I mean, put it this way. If you told Johnny Carson, hey, book Senator Adam Schiff, he would have been like, excuse me?
Exactly.
You're fired. But that's who their lead guests are. Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams, that's not fun.
No, that's not funny. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, like, that's not ha-ha funny.
Yeah.
And so I'd rather see animals doing tricks. I want to see, you know, people singing. I want to see Karnak. Like, I just, you know, once it loses that, because listen, people have listened to divisive stuff all day long. And it used to be that these shows were a break from that.
I know.
And it's not. It's just a continuation of the fighting and the division. And so I don't know. I think that if people are looking for that, they can find it other places. And if they want something entertaining, they're not going to stay up until 11, 12, whatever it is, to watch these shows.
I hear you. So, Shannon, I don't know if you think – how much do you think the Mondami primary win is national news?
I do, because I get asked about it a lot. People are like, hey, is New York about to elect a communist? Who is this guy? What do they know about him? If they're – you know, politically savvy at all. People have a lot of questions about him. You know, and here in D.C. this week, he comes and has this breakfast that they try to kind of sort of hide out from us. But almost everybody who came out of that breakfast goes and gives these quotes like, he's so great. He's so inspiring. This is the future of the party. And so, you know, I think that they're going to have to decide. Just like when there's a controversial Republican out there and every Republican lawmaker is asked, do you support this person? Is this person the voice of your party? I think it's fair to ask Democrats the same thing.
Senator Elizabeth Warren was on CNBC, and she could – I'm not going to play the soundbite where she efforts to try to justify his globalized intifada. She couldn't do it. Cut 16 is her talking about what would a socialist, communist, Marxist be like as mayor. Cut 16.
But let's be clear. Mondami ran this race because he said, I can make government work for better for families on the ground. I'm willing to try new ideas to bring down costs for people who live in New York City. And I understand that big time investors are freaking out about that because they can't quite understand how somebody is going to maybe make it to be mayor without having come and bent a knee to them. But that's not what he did. He went directly to the people. He told them what he wanted to do. I think he's going to do it.
Yeah, absolutely insane.
Well, so I don't know that, like, bringing new ideas to the table, socialism and communism, those aren't new
Brezhnev
ideas.
Yeah, Brezhnev would have loved these new ideas.
No, these are not new ideas. And we have history to guide us on how they work. So, you know, he's trying to temper some of this stuff now. But if you're talking about the government seizing the, you know, methods of production and socialized grocery stores and all kinds of things.
Abolition of private property.
Right. Getting rid of jails, getting rid of all, you know, I think we know how these things work. These are not new ideas. They've been tried before, and you can go back and check on the results.
So the Independent writes this: it reveals a conundrum for the Democrats, established in party moderates. Mamdani is popular among young people, but supporting him also risks the party being painted into a too radical, something mm-hmm. Donald Trump and Republicans used to batter Democrats in 2024 in the race. But get this, they go on to say that he's got the cool factor. So if mm-hmm. Schumer and other people push him away, they could not be cool?
Well, and I think Schumer and these guys that are longtime establishment people recognize, like, listen, New York is not the rest of the country. It's not Iowa. It's not Nebraska. It's not these other places. And so while you may have a super progressive young candidate who did great on social media, was interesting, he grabs this nomination in a place like New York City, that doesn't translate to Oklahoma City. That doesn't translate to, you know, even Chicago, you could argue. So there are other places in the country where having this person, the progressives want to, you know, they're talking about potentially primarying people like the Democratic leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. They kind of feel they're feeling their oats, as my dad would say. But they have to remember that what works in New York City is not going to work everywhere else. And I think that Schumer has enough, you know, experience to know that.
So Mark Halpern said this, said the race is not over. Cut 30.
We've got some very liberal mayors. The mayor of Boston's pretty liberal, and she's kind of a role model for Mamdani. I think the New York race, which I had thought was a foregone conclusion after Mamdani became the nominee, I think it's a contest now. There's a ceiling on his support. New York, you know, if you look at the last 30 years, Republican Rudy Giuliani, Michael Bloomberg, a Republican, and then an independent, they served five terms.
So do you think there's a ceiling? Because we see Cuomo in one poll from Harris is within 3 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there is a plus and a minus to how Mamdani kind of took everyone by storm, because now that he is the guy, there's going to be a lot more digging into his background, things that he said, and people will learn more about him. So you got to think, does the Upper East Side embrace this guy, you know, the same way that the, you know, some of these other more radical neighborhoods do? I don't know. It, you know, there's some information out of that New York race that said it was the more liberal elite, non-minority voters who actually put him over the top. So I don't know, but it seems like if Cuomo and Adams stay in, it's difficult to see how they're not so splintered that he just works his way up through the system.
Shannon, who do you have this weekend?
We have got Senator Dave McCormick. We also have Democrat Congressman Adam Smith. We've also got a special piece on the Savannah Bananas. If you're familiar with them, I spent some time with them when they were here. Two sold-out nights at Nats Park. Super fun, super humble guys, and the fans are obsessed with them.
You have anything to ask me?
Who do you have on this weekend, Brian? And will you be doing a dance out contest like you always promise me?
I haven't really figured that out yet. I got to see how much time I have at the end. But I'm going to be leading with Eric Adams.
Oh, very interesting. I like it.
Yes. And then I'm going to have Governor Ron DeSantis is going to be with us, too. We're going to have Mike Rowe is scheduled to be on tap. Coley Shimkus is going to do the media moments that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And am I forgetting anybody?
That's an A-list lineup right there.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think I'm missing somebody important.
Wrestling.
But we're going to talk alligator Alcatraz.
Yeah.
So that'll certainly
help.
Well,
you know, I grew up in Florida, and so we do weird things like wrestle alligators, and I feel like it could add to your show just to demonstrate what people would be facing if they escaped.
Senator Joe Manchin. So
I think he could wrestle an alligator if
right.
anybody
He was on
could.
Capitol Hill, and he says he doesn't recognize his former party.
Oh, well, that's why he's not there anymore, I have a feeling.
Yep. Go get him.
I'll
Shannon Bream.
This weekend.
I'm so glad we have the reunion. Yep.
Yes,
and by the way, these great lineups, Fox News Sunday is going to be all morning. It's going to dominate. Then it's going to go on Fox News Channel. And then One Nation Sunday at 10 p.m. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Illuminating. Intriguing. Inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's so busy,
he'll make your head spin.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
We should embrace being the party of pro-business. We're just simply talking about all businesses. What we don't want is monopolies.
No,
exactly. We don't want corruption. We don't want the folks that are, you know, that are preying on the communities that are the bad actors. But we have this reputation that the business community is somewhat hands off from us. And look, business community's finding right now how bad a businessman Donald Trump is.
Right.
Crapping on the economy, you know, tariffs, back and forth, threatening businesses. What can you imagine threatening individual businesses saying you're going to do this or I'm going to do this as a leader? If you're in the business community, shame on you for supporting this guy still.
Yeah. So glad he's not vice president. And so much of what you say was totally inaccurate. That is Governor Tim Walz, who is sitting on very awkwardly on a love seat with the former DNC chair on a new podcast that he has. Danny, you're over in Israel. Danny, you're picking up on this mayor race, right, in New York City?
Yeah. Hi, Brent. How are you doing? Yeah, I want to touch base with the issue of Mamdani. You know, while looking at Mamdani, it reminds me of Ashar from Syria. And I tell you why, Brian, because the fact that a jihadist, a Hamas terror supporter, is wearing a suit and a tie, it doesn't make him a Western world free person. It's the same jihadist mentality, just wearing a suit. Brian, we saw this week how Giuliani massacred the Druze minority in Syria. We saw his real face. I hope that Mamdani will not manage to fool New Yorkers like Ashara bluffed the free world leaders, including the Americans. And, you know, talking about the Druze, Brian, we are going to not let them down. We are going to defend our allies. We don't leave wounded people on the ground. You know, I'm a veteran officer of the IDF, and from the first day we were told you don't leave wounded people, soldiers, on the ground. And that's how we're going to manage the issue of the Druze.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not telling you that this Syrian guy is perfect, but up until this week, I didn't hear as many negative things coming from Syria that I thought I would be. We know that he was in an American prison in Iraq. So how he's reformed, he has looked around and saw the fate of almost everybody that he used to work with. He saw how Saudi Arabia cleaned up their act. And he said, well, after watching all this carnage in Syria, I love the fact that they kicked out the Russians and the Iranians. Those things I loved. I love the fact that they were no longer a direct threat to Israel. But they obviously have a lot of work to do, and they don't control their own country still. And a lot of innocent people could probably use some aid. So allowing some aid to get in there, I think there was more upside to doing a wait and see with President Trump. And I even saw Fareed Zakaria say about President Trump, he's about the only president that would do this and just on instinct decide to lift sanctions. John in California. Hey, John.
Hey, Brian, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm concerned. Nobody's talking about all the good economic news this week because of this Epstein stuff. On Wednesday, after the CPI numbers, which were a little elevated, probably because of what happened in June with gas prices because of the Iranian thing, wholesale level prices were actually flat when they were predicted to go up 0.3%. They went down from 2.7% to 2.3% at the wholesale level. And nobody's talking about this great economic news. Now, the wholesale level is a prediction of what's going to happen in the future, because those prices haven't reached the economy yet. So we also have a lot of good news this week that's not getting out because of this Epstein BS.
I know. I'm not buying it, and I think the polls show that there's been outweighed attention on it. I'm not buying it. I mean, I have to force myself to read this stuff in order to do the show and to do Fox and Friends. And I'm saying, okay, what do I have to know? Why am I upset again? So I just think that a lot of these podcasters, these bloggers, whatever they're doing, have an outweighed vision of how much power they have, as if that they're upset and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the extreme right wing, because they're upset that Donald Trump's supposed to be upset and shelve his entire agenda. It's just not important. You know what's the most underreported story? The U.S. and Ukraine have worked out a deal to help the U.S. and Ukraine. We are going to start getting their mass-produced of their drones. We only have 100,000. The Russians got 1.5 million. And we're going to start buying their tech, their cutting-edge drone technology, which is better than what the Russians are using. And we're going to sell them weapons instead, almost do a swap. You tell me that story, you might, oh, I don't care about international relations. But I tell you, it's impactful. But, I mean, the whole other stuff, it doesn't matter, if you ask me. Here's what Mark Penn said, cut 33.
I think Trump is more or less at a personal high in terms of overall approval and personal approval. I think the country is feeling somewhat better off than they were feeling under the Biden administration. They're still waiting to see exactly how the economy comes out. Far and away, inflation is the number one issue. Immigration is the number two issue. I think you see, you know, maybe health care and deficits and things coming up. But you really don't see the Epstein files, you know, on the top 10 or 15 issues here.
And this guy does polls for a living, right? And he leans Democrat, even though he's kind of moderate. Coming up next, Ian Fletcher, Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The American dream is back, and everyday families are already reaping the benefits of this incredible economic turnaround in just 6 months. President Trump has ended the era of economic surrender and implemented powerful tariffs to stand up for our workers and businesses and rebalance America's trading agreements. Despite all of the doom casting from the so-called experts claiming that these tariffs would be the end of the world as we know it, the opposite has occurred. Tariffs are not inflationary, as President Trump has said all along. In reality, tariffs are a source of massive revenue.
That is obviously the press secretary, and she is telling us, Carol Ann Leavitt, what's going on right now with the economy. There's a lot of positive signs. Retail sales are up 0.6%. Gas prices are down year to year 10%. We see tariff revenues over $100 billion, and only two countries have retaliated for our increase in tariffs as they try to work out different deals. And I could run through all these headlines that predicted doom and gloom when the Liberation Day was put into place in April of this year. Why hasn't it happened? And what is the result of 6 months of the Trump II? Ian Fletcher joins us now, co-author of Industrial Policy for the United States, winning the competition for good jobs and high-value industries. He's also a member of the advisory board for the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Ian, how would you characterize the first 6 months of economic policy with the Trump team?
I think it's been pretty good. Thanks for having me on your show. By the way, you didn't mention that I wrote the book Free Trade Doesn't Work, which came out in 2010, when people thought the tariffs were even crazier than they think them now. So I saw all this coming 15 years ago. You're absolutely right. Trump's been absolutely right. Tariffs are a legit policy tool. They're a winner for the United States at the present time and its economic circumstances, all the terrible things, trade war, inflation, so on and so forth, that were predicted, did not happen. So I broadly supportive of what Trump is doing on the tariff side, for sure.
What's the result been? I mean, we have the revenue, but people say, well, that's going to be downstream. Consumers are going to pay more. I haven't seen that in the numbers. Have you?
The inflation figures are what they were before we had tariffs. Inflation has not gone up at all, let alone gone up because of tariffs. I mean, granted, you can't push that too far. If you had a tariff of 100 million percent on everything under the sun, you would cause problems. But given what we're actually doing, no, we're in the clear. It's straightforward data. You can go look it up on the government websites, Bureau of Labor Statistics and so forth. It's pretty straightforward to me.
All right. So when we look at what's happening now, are you looking for some of these deals to come through? Are you happy with what you've seen? I know we don't get a lot of detail from the UK deal, from what we see from Vietnam and Indonesia.
Know, actually, one of the things everybody wants to talk about is trade in terms of let's make a deal, because Trump is a let's make a deal kind of guy. He comes from the real estate world. Truth be told, I think what they're doing on these trade deals is perfectly fine, but these deals are not the main event. They're not the thing that's going to make the biggest difference. I mean, quite honestly, the trade deal with Great Britain, it's like kissing your sister. We signed a peace treaty with the one country we weren't at war with on trade. So is it a good thing? Yeah. But there's other much more important things going on.
I think the EU is coming in next. I talked to the EU representative. They feel like they're finishing off the final, and I think Germany is pushing them to get this done. What would you like to see rebalance? Because right now I think we have an imbalance of about $300 billion towards them.
Yeah, there's no question that European Union and Germany and the countries that follow German economic policy have been practicing a kind of soft mercantilism against the U.S. for decades. Mercantilism is when you treat trade as a game you have to win, basically. It's a strategy that goes back hundreds of years. Part of the American Revolution was a revolt against how British mercantilism was being applied to the 13 colonies, and it goes on today. And the Europeans have kind of been doing this to us for a long time, or at least the European countries that have their act together economically, which, as I said, is the Germans and the countries that follow them. That has got to come to an end. But the issue I want to raise that nobody wants to talk about, but it is unbelievably big, is the overvaluation of the dollar, which would actually make more difference than any of these trade agreements. So that's not what people want to hear.
What do you mean? Do you like to see a weak dollar?
Yeah, because look at it this way. Suppose you have a 10% tariff on imported goods, but your currency is overvalued by 15%. You don't have a tariff. You have a -5 tariff. People think that the overvalued dollar is good because a strong dollar means a strong America. It's like, no, a strong dollar means we import too much, and we can't export because our exports are not competitive. There's no such thing as strong or weak when it comes to dollars. It's like your blood pressure. It can be too high or it can be too low. Either can kill you. Right now it's too high.
So looking at the industrial, not only do we have to increase our industrial base on manufacturing, there are certain things we don't want to do. We don't necessarily have to make socks, as they say, but there's certain things we've got to start doing at home.
Yep.
What industries would you like to see brought back from security and from the economic perspective?
Well, the number one thing is automobiles. There's no good reason for this country to be importing advanced products like automobiles. There's also things like pharmaceuticals. An incredibly high percentage of our drugs, particularly generics, are made in India from Chinese ingredients. This is not only bad from a trade point of view, it's also unsafe because China is run by outright crooks, and the Indians are not evil, but they're kind of sloppy, so the quality control isn't there. So I definitely don't want to be taking pharmaceuticals from those countries. And then things like, why can you not buy a flat panel TV made in the United States? I mean, people talk about socks. You mentioned socks. Okay, socks are low tech. T-shirts are low tech. The jobs you get making those things are going to be like just above minimum wage. They're not jobs that people are going to want to have unless they have no choice. But making things like flat panel TVs, that is highly automated, high tech, highly skilled. There's no reason for this not to be done in the United States. If we can't do that, what can we do?
I hear you. And we got to bring it back. Do you believe that the corporate tax rate allows that to happen? Do you believe that we were already seeing that before the pandemic in Trump's first term?
I don't think the corporate tax rate per se is a big part of that. I think tariffs are a big part of that. Corporate tax rates are a whole other issue you can talk about some other time. But if you're talking about relocating where stuff gets made, tariffs are your deal.
And you're not looking for these deals, right? You're just happy. Let's just tariff straight across the board. You're personally
indifferent? I'm not against trade deals. It's just that and I apologize to any of your listeners who've gotten the wrong impression about this. Everybody talks about trade deals because they're a news item, because Trump has let Mr. make a deal, because it's a straight-up one-country-versus-another-country contest, and we think we won a negotiation or we lost a negotiation, we got a good deal or a bad deal. And that's true to some extent, but there's so much other stuff that's much bigger than that, that has a bigger effect than that. Like I said, currency is way bigger because currency applies across the board to every country in the world. There's nothing they can do about it. They can't retaliate. If we put a 10% tariff on them, they can retaliate. If we bring the dollar down to a competitive price, you can't retaliate against that. And it helps our exports. So, like, America still exports lots of good stuff, like Boeing aircraft. We compete with Airbus all over the world. And if the dollar is stronger than the euro, we're at a disadvantage. And that's going to hurt the workers in the Carolinas and Washington State where this stuff is built.
Do you worry about us being no longer considered the universal currency?
You know, that's a Wall Street obsession that I don't think is nearly as important as people think it is. Put it this way. I ask you a straight-up question. Do you think there are any free lunches in economics? Well, if you don't, then this whole business of the dollar being the international reserve currency is just a lot less exciting than people think it is, because it's not some magical status that America has that we get free money showered on us by the rest of the world because the dollar is the reserve currency. It's a thing that has costs and benefits, and right now the costs have gotten beyond the benefits. And if we were to start sharing the burden of being the global reserve currency a bit more with, say, the euro, which is the only really plausible alternative. I mean, right now the dollar is about 60% of global currency reserves. If we went down to, say, 40% or 35% and the euro went up to, they're about 20% now, and they went up to 35%, that is not a tragedy. In fact, it probably benefits the United States by helping bring the dollar down to a more competitive level where we're not sucking in all these imports because foreign goods are artificially cheap and making our exports uncompetitive because the dollar is overpriced.
Ian Fletcher, co-author of The Industrial Policy for the United States, Winning the Competition for Good Jobs and High-Value Industries. You can also pick up his previous book, Free Trade Doesn't Work, What Should Replace It and Why. Ian, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. 1-866-408-7669. When we come back, musician extraordinaire Brian Kelly will be joining us. He's going to be Zooming in, so you can go online. Go to the Fox News app, click on Watch, and you'll see it. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
American spirit, that red, white, and blue, it's flying for freedom, for me and for you. It's what I believe in, this country I love. That American spirit runs in our blood.
It's one of the many new songs that Brian Kelly's been pumping out at a dizzying rate. He's a solo artist now for FGL for a while, and now he's established himself on his own. Brian Kelly, good friend of the show, joins us via Zoom. Brian, great to see you.
Great to see you, brother. Thanks for having me. From one BK to another.
I know. You happen to be the cooler one, who also is more diverse, and I'll tell you. And then we texted over the weekend, and you're like, hey, Brian, can I get back to you Monday? I'm a little busy, and you showed me the size of the marlin that you caught. I mean, tell me, how do you learn to fish like that?
Oh, man. You know what? The blue marlin game, you know, it took me a while to get into it. And I've been into it, I guess, last four or five years and been trying to hunt one down for a while. Just got my first blue marlin a month or so ago. and then got our first boated Blue Marlin this past weekend. It was the Blue Marlin Grand Championship out of Orange Beach, Alabama. And our team, our crew, we went out and in hopes of boating one, bringing it back to the scales, and we made it happen. It was such a work of art by our captain, our mates. And, you know, fortunately, I guess I got lucky. Dino, our co-owner, he goes, BK, you're up next. And so we waited for hours. We were trolling. We moved spots. We trolled some more. We moved to another spot. And then it happened pretty quick. And so I knew I was up next. And so you just never know when it's going to happen. And the boat just went crazy. It was a little over an hour fight. And, man, just – It was a special, special thing connecting with that fish. Like, I had my heels dug into the bottom of that chair where your feet go. That thing was tugging on me hard. I was dug in, but in total control. And it's just such a cool experience. It's such a fun way to fish. And it really is. They call it sport fishing for a reason, man. It gets sporty out there. So, well, it was a great time.
I mean, don't you have to worry because you're a songwriter, you're a guitar player, and you're sitting there grinding it out with your hands for hours? Do you worry about cutting them up?
Nah. Just let it rip, you know?
I guess so. So, Brian, I know you got dates coming up in on the 24th in Northern Savannah at Victory.
Yep.
Going to be
yep.
at the Senate at 8 o'clock in South Carolina on the 25th, at yep. the Boathouse at Waterway, the Bar and Grill on the 27th, the Windjammer over in Island of Palms, South Carolina, then
yes,
the Lillian West Wells Hall at the Parker in Fort Lauderdale back in Florida, and at the Maxwell King Center for the Performing Arts over in Melbourne, Florida. What is it like being on your own, kind of remaking yourself, your style as a solo
yeah.
artist?
Man, I'm enjoying it. You know, I kind of just put my head down there for a couple years, and next thing you know, I've got four records out in the last 4 years, which is really crazy. I'm just very fortunate that I feel super inspired, and I have an outlet to get all this music out and challenge myself, and just really proud of all the work that not only me, but my whole crew, my team, you know, our touring band, and, you know, the last couple records I've made with my touring band, and, you know, our guitar player who also writes for my publishing company, he produced the last two records, and just the team and the crew and the people around us that we're building, it just feels really special. And, man, I'm really enjoying it. It's kind of like captain in your own boat, you know, mm-hmm. and making all the calls. But we're just really enjoying it, man. I feel really, really blessed to get all these songs out to, and also to have a tour this summer to go out and connect these songs with people in real time and real life and just continue to build what we're building.
I saw you at the RNC. You see, you have a history with the Trumps before he was president, right? I mean, you guys are friendly. The families are friendly.
I don't know. The first time I met him was at Mar-a-Lago back in 21, I think it was.
Okay. And what was that like?
It was awesome. I mean, it was special. I mean, he took time with us. We were there supporting somebody, and it was a beautiful night. Number one, the property, the whole, you know, experience was top tier, was amazing. But just getting to shake his hand, thank him for everything he's done, and just stand with him. He's a little taller than I thought he was. He was just about my height. And, you know, it was real great to our wives and our whole crew. And just, you know, you can just tell he's a people person. He's a real human. And just the way he interacts with everybody, you know, he really does give you time and look you in the eyes. And, it was a special moment for sure.
And is that what led to you playing at the RNC?
I guess maybe. I'm not sure what led to that. I'm trying to remember how we got connected. I actually knew a guy who was with President Trump in his first 4 years that worked for him, actually. I think that maybe connected the dots with me and his team. He's like, hey, you should try to get in.
Right.
And I think at the time he might have connected the dots. And, you know, that was a wonderful experience too, man. There was a lot of love in that building. It was great. It was a lot of great speakers. There was a lot of momentum. I think there was an even bigger momentum shift at especially the night I was there, the kind of night where your hair is standing up the whole time. You're walking around, you're hearing these things, you're feeling these emotions of
right.
all these like-minded people in one place. I mean, the energy was through the roof. I mean, it was amazing.
And with American Spirit and some of your songs, you're a very patriotic guy. This is going to be a big year, 250. Are you sensing that with your audience?
250 is going to be massive, man. It better be. It better be the biggest celebration we've ever had.
Right.
No doubt about it.
And you, American Spirit, you have other patriotic songs too, correct? You resonate with America,
yep.
and you find that as a great topic.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote a song last year called Make America Great Again, and just put my thoughts and feelings and my heart and everything, just kind of my, you know, just let it all out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of became an anthem, I think, for sure.
Check out Brian Kelly. He's playing all around the South from Savannah to Florida. Thanks so much, Brian.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.